Blog Talk Radio.
Tornado.
All right, folks, this is Rob Morales and Rich Bergeron.
Holy shit, I got done right in the beauty. This is the tornado, Tony Pentecal.
We had a special little show here for you tonight. At Cody Bollinger. We did a little 10-minute interview with him earlier in the day. So that's in the can, coming later. And we also have the Sugar Shane Mosley and Canelo Alvarez conference call on tap. We're going to play that in the last hour. So we're just going to be live for the first few minutes here. But we got to waste about 50 minutes. Do you think we can do that, Tony?
You put me on a topic and you let me go.
All right.
Before we get into the press conference, I know you had the opportunity to be on the call. I would have loved to have been on the call. But unfortunately, my work does not allow that. Now, when I was at my older job, I wasn't on the phone as much. What I would do on days there were like conference calls like that, I would schedule those on days because I would do a lot of data entry, and I would just kind of put a headset on, do my data entry, and be on the conference call, which I always thought was cool. Unfortunately, the placement now, that would not work. So I had to send you in a question. But I'm going to ask this right here and right now. Rich, I know you know a lot about the sport of boxing. What credentials do you think Shane Mosley has that is warranting him this title fight? In the last 2 years, he's 0-2-1, which includes two wide and clear defeats to Floyd Mayweather and Manny Pacquiao. Fights that I think he won a combined one round in, which was the round that he staggered Mayweather, or the second round of their fight. And he had a very lackluster and untried draw against Sergio Mora. How does that warrant him getting a shot at Canelo Alvarez on the pay-per-view, aside from just his name?
Well, it doesn't really, and there was a lot of questions from the other press. I wasn't quite that rude. There kind of have to be sometimes, but I just wanted to kind of be the nice guy. So I asked a couple, easy questions. Plus, you really couldn't hear Sugar Shane. He was like, very...
I saw a few people had posted about that online, that it was really difficult to hear him.
Yeah, he was like really speaking low. They actually asked him to speak up after he finished with me, but there was a little gap of time, like at least 30 seconds, where they just kind of let the line go dead with my mic open. I could have asked him a bunch more questions, but I was just like, two questions and then see you later. But there was the first guy with him, and with Canelo Alvarez. I mean, they took like 4 or 5 questions. They used to do it, so I probably could have gotten along a lot more in, but... It is what it is. I didn't ask him about that, but a lot of other guys asked him what it was like to be kind of seen as a stepping stone. And, he claims that everything is different now. He's got a much better training camp situation than he's ever had. He's in the best shape of his life. You know what all boxers say going into fights.
Yeah, absolutely.
They're underdogs.
To come out there and claim to be in the best shape of his life.
I was going to ask Canelo Alvarez in the first half hour, but I didn't get a chance to buzz in because I thought it was like one of those cases where you got to buzz in at the beginning of the call and then when they tell you to buzz in.
Yeah.
And I figured I'd test that theory, so I never touched the star one again until the Shane Mosley call, and then it was like a special little message he gave you, so I knew I didn't get in the first time. But I wanted to ask Canelo Alvarez, how close do you think it was to be in you in the main event, and why do you think Floyd didn't want to make that fight? But Dan Raphael kind of asked a similar question. about whether he could see himself in that main event, being so close to it, and then the co-feature, Bob.
I just literally drew a brain freeze right there. I know where you're coming from with Canelo Alvarez having the opportunity to be in that main event picture. He was rumored to be one of the opponents for Floyd Mayweather. And I think it comes down to one major factor, and it's the almighty dollar sign. Who is going to sell more pay-per-views to the conventional fan, to the average fan, to, the guy out there that's, a fight fan, but, will watch only the big fights? You're going to watch Floyd Mayweather and Saul Canelo Alvarez? Or you're going to go out there and you're going to plunk down money for Miguel Cotto. Cotto is the bigger name. Each of the guys has a popularity with their own ethnicity. Alvarez, very popular among the Mexicans. And then also you have Cotto, who's very popular among the Puerto Ricans. So you each have a strong fan base. What I guess they're going for here is to get the people that are on the fence. And they know, Joe Fan out there, who's a casual boxing fan, watches the Mayweather fights on occasion, watches the Pacquiao fights. He may have not bought Mayweather Ortiz because he didn't know who Victor Ortiz was. But he may have bought Mayweather Shane Mosley because he sure as hell knew who Shane Mosley was. Same thing here. You don't really know who Canelo Alvarez is, but you sure as hell know who Miguel Cotto is. And I think that's the bottom line right there.
Well, I think it also has something to do with the fact that Miguel Cotto has lost a few fights. Okay, so I was saying, Floyd Mayweather and Oscar De La Hoya are pretty good friends, and they're business partners, so I think they're grooming this Canelo Alvarez fight with Floyd for a later time. And, I think they're looking at Mayweather's opponent, Miguel Cotto, the same way that they look at Sugar Shane Mosley. Guy's been around, he's got a big name, but he can be beaten. So I think there's being smart businessmen and setting that up, but it remains to be seen whether either guy's really going to give him a fight. I think the setup of this card makes it look like there is going to be real competitive fights in both of these matches, but I think what you're going to end up finding out is it's going to be walk in the park for Floyd, and Alvarez might decision, but I don't think Shane Mosley is really going to test him all that much. Let's see.
I think it will go the distance. The only way that I think it gets a stoppage would be if Mosley decides to retire on his stool. I definitely see Alvarez winning this fight. I can see Mosley having a few moments here and there. Obviously, Alvarez is still a young guy, and I don't think he is on the speed and skill level of Mayweather or Pacquiao. But on the other hand, he is a very good puncher. I just see this fight being one where if it is stopped, it's Mosley's the one pulling the plug. There was rumor around the 9th or 10th round in the Pacquiao fight. They literally had to shove him out of the corner to get him to continue in the fight he wanted to throw the towel.
Well, you see, you talked about a little bit in the conference call about how health was an issue back then in the Pacquiao fight. It isn't now. So we'll see. We also heard Keisha Morrissey tell us at one point, it was before the Pacquiao fight, that Mosley's strength has gone through the roof. And of course, it's like the old joke on him is he's too old to box. People are saying he's past crime and you should hang it up. But, you know, I one of the questions I asked him was, what does the seventh world title mean to his legacy? And, you know, obviously he thinks it's very important to go out on a high note like anyone wants to as an athlete. But, you know, it's going to get to the point, if he keeps having lackluster performances, that he's just going in there and going through the motions and not really doing much for his legacy at all. He's kind of hurting it. But at the same time, you know, he's a fighter. He's going to do what he wants to do. He wants to fight until he can't fight anymore. It's literally what he said. It's his ultimate goal when I asked him that. And so that's kind of impressive in a way. But, you know, who knows? He doesn't seem to have the slurred speech like some fighters do from being in there too long. So he might not have to have that that kind of an issue to stop him. But I don't know. I don't know. They're just going to keep throwing him in there as long as he's competitive and finishes the fight, I think. And he's still going to keep believing that he can beat anybody as long as he's in good shape and training hard. So, you know, we might see a miracle win on his part, and he might prove us all wrong any day now, I should say. So, can't really count him out in that respect. He's
Or if we want to leave, you know, he likes to think of Randy Holyfield, and he's fighting on until he wins another world title. And it's like, things is not.
Wrong place and wrong time, I think, for him. It's just like, there's no good title fight for him. Either the Klitschko's or nothing. That's why you probably haven't heard much Holyfield lately.
I got a trivia question for you, and I don't even have the answer yet, the full answer. I got my Ring magazine yesterday, and it had trivia questions in it now. And I was at the hill, some of them were pretty good, some of them were pretty hard. There was one in there that there were only two men in the pros that fought the trio of Mike Tyson, Evander Holyfield, and Bill Foreman. Can you guess them? I got one right up the front of my head, and I'm tempting not to look at the box set to find the other.
I guess Michael Moore. I might be wrong about that one.
Yes, because he never fought Mike Tyson.
Okay. Let's see. Not Red and Bow, because he never fought Foreman.
Or Tyson.
Jeez, that's a tough one. Three people did that?
Two people fought all three of them. Now, one of them, I was actually there at the fight between Holyfield and this fighter. I was there back in 1993.
One of them's not Buster Douglas. He only fought Tyson.
Not Buster Douglas. He never fought George Foreman. This fighter that I remembered off the top of my head, he fought Holyfield twice, losing via 8th-round stoppage and via 12-round decision. Mike Tyson knocked him out in one round, and then he took George Foreman in George's second career, pretty much life and death, for 10 rounds, was the first guy to really bust Foreman up after Foreman's comeback.
I have no clue. I should know. Drawing a blank.
Alex Stewart.
Okay. Here you go.
I went to his second fight with Holyfield. And what was funny about that was his second fight with Holyfield, which was down in Atlantic City. My dad, in 1993, on the undercard was Vinnie Paz versus Lloyd Hunnigan. It was the first time I got to see Vinnie Paz fight live. This was his third fight after coming back from the broken neck. And when I was down in Florida a couple weeks ago, and I'm talking to a gentleman who had a Rocky Marciano shirt on, so we start talking boxing, and he's from Massachusetts, and, you know, I told him how we were doing all the stuff with the Marciano Foundation and all that. And then we were talking about Vinnie Paz. And he goes, I remember one time he was fighting at Atlantic City. He was huge down there. He's fighting at Atlantic City. And then Holyfield was the main event. The people were walking out after Vinny's fight. They didn't even stay for the Holyfield fight. I'm like, yeah, I was there. That was it. When Holyfield fought Alex Stewart and Vinny fought Lloyd Hunnigan and topped him in 9 rounds. And so we had a good laugh about that. But yeah, Alex Stewart's the one, and I'm trying to think of any other one. And
I don't know. Yeah, sounds like a box wreck.
I'm gonna have to. I'm just trying to you know, give it a few more shots without cheating. See if I can figure it out. Here's the deal, Rick. Remind me by the end of the show. While I'm doing the show, I'm gonna rack my brain as much as possible. And then by the end of the show, if I can't figure it out, I'll go on box it.
Okay. I had a couple other stories in the works here. I don't know if you read the Philadelphia Daily News recently, but there's an article in there about Larry Feinberg, also known as Larry Fine and Larry from the Three Stooges.
Yeah, he's from Philadelphia, I know that.
Yeah, and I guess he had one boxing match. Kid.
I did not know that.
He was under the name Kid Roth. And he won his first and only lightweight bout about 90 years ago.
Oh,
he went on to lose his next 190 fights, all to Mo Howard.
I'm planning to go see the movie, Rich. I think I have to go see it.
Yeah, I guess so. I didn't realize.
I went to the movies last week. I was in. There's a rare instance of me in tears at the movie.
Uh-oh. You're laughing so hard?
I couldn't hold it in. American Reunion put me in tears.
Is that funny?
It was hilarious. Steve Steffler was taking a dump in the guy, Peter Revere. Oh, listen to this, man. It was a sad event, but I got a very good compliment today. I went to the viewing, I went to the viewing of a woman that, I grew up living next to. Very, very much my age. She's 98 years old, passed away on Sunday. She was my grandmother's best friend, and she passed away nearly 22 years to the day that my grandmother passed away. My grandmother died on April 7th, 1990, and this woman died 1 o'clock in the morning on April 8th. So I went to the viewing today, and I saw people from the old neighborhood that I really don't see anymore. And my father could not attend because he had flown out to Jamaica. You know, him and my mom had gone on vacation. So, I kind of went there representing the family. And I was talking to my dad's friend, who I know very well, and he was introducing me to one of my dad's cousins that I had never met, and actually my dad hasn't really even seen in a couple of years. So as I'm talking to this guy, Pat, and we're talking, and, when he found out who my grandparents were, and he goes, oh, my God, I remember your grandfather, I'm sure I remember your father. And he looks at me, he goes, you're the fighter. I said, yes, I am. He goes, I've seen your fights on the Internet. I mean, that was definitely a boost. It definitely, made me feel good. So I walked out of there. Obviously it was a sad event, but I still walked out of there. Obviously pay my respects to a woman that after my grandmother passed away when I was, still relatively young, and I still lived in that neighborhood for, another 11 years. She was kind of like a third grandmother to me. She came over the night that I was going to my senior prom to make sure that she saw me off, as my grandmother would have loved to. And I don't know what else to say, but like I said, it was cool to hear. You're the fighter. I've seen the fights on the Internet. It kind of made me feel somewhat important. And then what the guy said, he goes, I know you're really the only guy that did. I mean, there was another uncle that was a pro fighter. I never met him. But he was, the neighborhood that we grew up in, everybody in that neighborhood was rough. Tougher guys. They didn't take no shit. And he goes, nice to see how you upheld that tradition so well. And that was a nice little compliment.
Well, speaking of family reunions, I don't know if you heard about this, but Floyd Sr. went back to his son's gym recently. Yes. And there was some a little bit of tension still. No apologies. But apparently some congeniality between the two of them. They shook hands. And like I mentioned before, after going to that gym and seeing how Floyd goes through a workout in front of the media, I could understand why his father's presence and, you know, butting in would upset the guy, because from what I saw, he does not like to be talked to or at, you know. It's pretty much he does his own thing, and he sets the pace and tells people what to do on his own workout. He doesn't have that type of Mickey coach who's screaming at him all the time about, you know, what kind of bum he is and how he needs to step it up. It's all his pace. You know, he is the boss. It's Mayweather gym, you know, so the father comes in there and starts spouting his shit, and, you know, the son goes nuts, and the only thing that you really fault Floyd for is just being completely disrespectful to his father. But if you talk to anybody that knows the family, they'll tell you, you know, well, the father is tough to deal with, too. You know, he's got his own issues.
Absolutely. I mean, you have a lot of really short personalities there. That would be like, you know, you get, you know, Bill Gates, like the guy that pretty much is the computer guru of the world. And, you know, he's the number one guy. Now, maybe his father was, you know, a computer programmer, you know, and a decent computer programmer. And his uncle was a guy that invented something or other. But still, it's Bill Gates is the end-all, be-all.
Right.
Now imagine you get them all in the same area together, and they're trying to tell Phil what to do. No, Phil, do it this way. Yeah, no shit, he's going to get pissed off. Because, right, even though he's the younger guy, let's face the facts. He is the guy with the best credentials.
Right.
I just made that analogy up off the top of my head. I am a fucking genius.
Well, Mayweather Sr., of course, is a little bit upset at the fact that his son gives him no credit for teaching him how to fight. And he says, I was not a bad fighter myself. I was in the middle of my career, but I couldn't give it everything. I had to take care of Floyd Jr. He fights like his daddy and no one else. Come to my house and watch the videos. That's what I taught him. And he also said, one thing I've learned about life is live and let live. I didn't come here to make no apology. I owe no apology. I'm the father. He hasn't done that either, even though a lot of people feel he should. And this is the best part. Floyd also said, I guess I'm going to have to go with that as far as, you know, the embrace and the handshake at the end. He says, his ego is too big to apologize. Mine could never be that big. That's the problem. There's no way I'd ever do that to my father. You don't talk to your dad like he's someone who lives beneath a bridge. And then finally he says, I don't feel good in here. It's my son's gym. The way you feel is the way it is. He made a statement in the last year's argument about all the things he had. If it hadn't been for me, he'd have nothing. We went 9 years without talking before. Then to come back with this, don't scandalize me. You scandalize me, you scandalize yourself. So there's an uneasy piece there in the Mayweather family.
And they're always well-based.
Right. Now, there's a couple MMA stories, a couple comical MMA stories I want to share with everybody. I know I shared one with you earlier in the week about the MMA fighter at the party who got knocked out at the pool.
Yeah.
Wow, this is a funny one. You know, you think MMA fighter, oh, he's a tough guy. Well, they had this big party in a pool area. And this guy, Nate Patterson, got into a dangerous brawl at an apartment complex just south of the New Mexico State University campus on March 30th. An employee asked another guy to help him get people out of the pool area, but this Patterson guy didn't want to go. So the man told Patterson to calm down, but he didn't. And officers say instead Patterson went after the man, who just kept backing up and trying to avoid a fight. and one officer says he was trying to avoid a confrontation with Mr. Patterson, but I guess at some point he realized he couldn't back up anymore, and so one punch did it. That's all it took. And this MMA fighter was out cold when police arrived. He was not responding. He was then flown to an El Paso hospital and has since been released. That's pretty bad. I mean, people are actually praying for him and wishing him well on Facebook. From one punch, from a guy who doesn't even fight, from what it sounds like. And a guy who is a seasoned MMA fighter gets blasted out. One punch knockout. Unfortunately, it's not a YouTube hit because nobody had it on camera. But, man, sounds like a tough day at the office for that MMA fighter. And I'm guessing that the alcohol was probably a factor. Kind of reminds me of there was this one scene from one of the Ultimate Fighter episodes when this kid got really, really drunk and he begged another guy to punch him in the face as hard as he could. And the guy's like, seriously? No, like, no repercussions? You're not going to be mad? And the guy's like, no, just hit me. So he hit him and knocked him right clean out. It was pretty funny. It was more of a flash knockout than anything, but it was still out cold. So that guy had a bad day. Then there's another story here about a Los Angeles fireman. Now, this has been making the rounds in a lot of different news outlets. This guy was caught moonlighting as a mixed martial arts fighter under the name of Gun Noodle while he was on workers' compensation between December 2nd, 2008 and May 20th, 2011. Rafael Davis, 35, he fought in MMA bouts while he was workers' comp. So I can't go to work, but I can beat people up. He was hit with 4 felony counts of insurance fraud, LA Weekly reported, citing the district attorney's office. And an office spokeswoman declined to detail what ailments Davis claimed to have that would prevent him from being able to work. He's being held on $30,000 worth of bail, and he's facing a 5-year jail term if convicted. And according to one website, the 6'3", 203-pound Davis has a 12-2 record and went 6-1 through the time that he was on this claim period. So that one fight was probably when he was really hurt. One fight that he lost, I guess. Oh, boy. So anyway, that's that there. And a couple other stories here before we get to the interview. California State Athletic Commission voted on Monday to approve an amendment that would allow therapeutic use exemptions for combat sports athletes who use drugs currently banned by the state agency for medical purposes, including testosterone and marijuana. To be adopted into state law, the amendment's verbiage must now be reviewed and approved by the Department of Consumer Affairs and then the state's Office of Administrative Law. And that process could take months or years if it passes at all. So DCA representative was present at the Monday hearing to read a letter from its director stating the agency's concern that the proposed exemption process wasn't specific enough and undermined the CSAC's purpose to ensure fighter safety. The amendment's origin dates back to late 2010 after UFC middleweight Chael Sonnen tested positive for elevated testosterone levels, then maintained at a suspension appeals hearing that he'd gotten an exemption. CSAC Executive Officer Jordan Dodd was unable to find any documentation to support Sonnen's claim, and the fighter's 1-year suspension was reduced, only to be reinstated later. And in response, the CSAC began to draft a formal testosterone use exemption process for all future applicants. And California doesn't have a therapeutic use exemption, and in the absence of one, the executive officer cannot authorize someone to fight with any of the prohibited substances in use, said the CSAC counsel. Dodd said he has granted exemption approval to select athletes with proper medical documentation. One of those athletes was UFC middleweight Dan Henderson, who was granted a testosterone use exemption for testosterone when he fought Mauricio Shogun Hua at UFC 139 last November. and Henderson's rigorous approval process served as a test case that the commission used to evaluate its proposed testosterone use exemption requirements. So, like Henderson, one of the three fighters approved for testosterone exemption in Nevada, Todd said future GUE candidates would need to provide extensive medical records documenting past use of the drug for medical purposes. So, blood tests and the works. It's pretty interesting. Also, on Monday, the CSCC voted unanimously to exclude two asthma medications, salbutamol and salmeterol, from its prohibited substance list. So that's a pretty interesting story because testosterone use is pretty rampant in MMA, I think, especially because the levels go down after a period of time. So what happens is a lot of fighters are using it for recovery from an injury or for training camps. You know, you need to go strong for 4 or 5 weeks straight, and you start doing testosterone, and then you just lay off a few weeks before the fight, and, you know, your body levels go back to normal for most cases. So, you know, whether it gives you an unfair advantage, I would think that it does. That's why people do it, and that's why people recommend it to other fighters. Whether it gives you an advantage in the actual fight, well, if you're not using it for the fight, it doesn't. Obviously, probably doesn't give you that immediate boost. But how do you prepare for that fight if you're using it? You know, how is it fair for some people to be able to use it and others not? I don't know. But anyway, they're starting to look at it and make exceptions for it and these exemptions. And I think it's going to pave the way to eventually just make it legal across the board. It seems to be something that's, you know, just dragging people down. Sorry for the disconnect, folks. We're just getting Tony Bang on the line here. Bishop.
Renato.
Hey. We get booted again. We keep getting booted. We're back. I wanted to mention a couple results from last week. We had Edgar Sosa fought Wilbert Weekab in a 12-round fight. Went to unanimous decision. Weekab held the WBC Silver Flyweight title for a bit after upsetting Edrin, E-D-R-I-N, that's a weird name, Edrin Dapudog in 2010. And if you care to know how serious the WBC Silver titles are in some special cases, he once defended it against a guy who was 12-16 coming into the fight. In November, he went to Japan for a real WBC eliminator and lost a decision to Toshiyuki Igarashi. But apparently that's not what the WBC really wanted to see, so they gave Weekab this final eliminator against former junior flyweight titleist and sanctioning body favorite, Sosa. Sosa won on scores of 114-111 across the board, despite being knocked down in the first round. Weekab was down in the sixth, and he also lost a point in the fourth for throwing Sosa. Igarashi has been sitting around since November, while Sonny Boy Yarrow got a title shot against Pung Saklek Wong Jongkan in early March. Everyone's shocked, of course, Jarrow won. Jarrow versus Igarashi would make sense with Sosa waiting in the wings, I guess. Sosa is now 45-7 with 27 knockouts, while Weekab drops to 33-7-1 with 18 knockouts. Also from Anaheim, California, Ronnie Rios had a unanimous decision win against Guillermo Sanchez. Rios took scores of 80-72 twice and 79-73. And the 22-year-old doesn't remind me of Eloy Perez so much in a style as he does in prospect push. When Mayweather calls Cotto solid, often reminded of how enormous Mayweather's ego is. Mayweather is a great fighter. Cotto's been a great fighter, but probably still look very good. And a guy like Rios is solid. I'm reading somebody else's stuff here, so it's not really my opinion. Anyway, Rios is now 18-0, and Sanchez dips to 13-6-1 with his 4 straight losses. He's now 2-6-1 in his last 9. Also, we had James Toney and Bobby Gunn. James Toney last fought in November. And as he traveled all the way to Russia to embarrass himself over 12 rounds against Denis Lebedev, that fight was at cruiserweight when Toney weighed in at 199.25. For this fight against bare knuckle boxing champion Bobby Gunn, who hasn't fought in real boxing in 3 years.
When did Toney weigh 199.25?
Against Lebedev last November.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
I didn't know he's in. Hold on, I gotta look at that. I had no idea he was in under 200 for the latest decade.
Well, he came in 248 on the scales for this fight against
Gunn. That's my over under was 250.
Gunn broke his hand in the 4th round, which sounds kind of funny. Because he never broke his hand in a bare knuckle fight, but he broke it with a boxing glove on. But anyway, James Toney versus Bobby Gunn. Toney won by RTD. Toney is now 74-7-3, and he gets his first stoppage win since totally whomping the great Matthew Greer in 2009. But if you want to go back further than that, it's 2003 when he stopped Holyfield. Gunn is 21-5-1 with 18 knockouts and will surely return to the world of fist fighting and pretend it's noble or artful. But anyway, it seems to me like every time someone has to write about the latest Toney fight, they include that he surely has a Hall of Fame resume. Maybe he does, but so what? Almost like they're apologizing for him. Bobby Gunn did not do too well in his return to boxing, so we'll see whether he gets another shot at it or not. I think he primarily did it just for the name and the money. Let's see. A couple of whistleblowers here.
All right, I gotta look at this.
Brock Lesnar.
James Penn was under 200 pounds for a fight. I'm going to be surprised off my head.
Brock Lesnar is back on WWE Raw. He's talked about
that. I saw him attack John Cena.
Yeah.
And then attack him again and punch him in the mouth and put his mouth open.
Well, it's been a pretty interesting development as far as the contract negotiations or stipulations. And apparently there's a little bit of a special exception made for The Rock and Brock Lesnar. Basically, they get to do fewer shows for more money than most of the underlings there at the WWE. And, of course, that's going to piss off some of these stars like John Cena, who's been pretty loyal to the company, has been around a little while, and now he's getting pushed to the back burner in popularity and FaceTime by these two guys. Lesnar is going to receive $5 million to work a total of 30 to 40 wrestling gigs for 1 year. The dilemma with this exists that other full-time members of the roster perform over 200 dates per year and don't even make a fifth of Lesnar's income. In fact, other than a smattering of elite headliners, most WWE wrestlers make less than $500,000 a year. Now, you put that in equivalence with boxing. Shane Mosley is making $600,000 for his fight against Canelo Alvarez. And that's not even a headliner. It's a co-main event. It's not a main event. That doesn't include the travel expenses and hotel accommodations that those wrestlers have to disperse for out-of-pocket each week, that $500,000. So the gap between dates and salary among full-time WWE wrestlers and Brock Lesnar is pretty bad, indeed, overall. Issue for the WWE over time. And The Rock accordingly has a comparable WWE contract and has been leaked out that D-Rock will work about the same amount of matches as Lesnar over the year, to culminate with a bout at WrestleMania 29 against Brock Lesnar.
So. Well, I mean, I know a lot of the... I'm obviously a wrestling fan, and I... when you talk to Erica a few months ago, and I'll talk about Erica a little more, I think perhaps that same. It was a big, you know, big time in the wrestling, and you know, I had a good time with him. I enjoyed talking to Diamond Dallas Page last month. You know, sometimes you got to look at it both ends of the spectrum. It sucks when, you know, the new guy comes in and you get bumped down a notch, especially a guy that's only going to be in there as a part-timer. It bumps you down a notch. And then a couple of the wrestlers were a little bit resentful for The Rock coming in, you know, and basically grabbing one of the main events of the Survivor Series and then the main event at WrestleMania because he pockets the big chunk of change. But then you got to look at it the other way. The payouts are really determined on, you know, the buy rate of the show. So every person that buys that show helps put a little bit of money in your pocket. So if you're a wrestler, that you know what, you paid your dues, you work hard. Like a couple of the guys that, you know, wrestled on the earlier part of the show, Kane, who's been around in the WWE for 15 years now. You know, he wrestled like the first or second fight of the night. You know, he came out there, he did a job. You know, you're right, he did not have a huge part of the card. But it's like it was Kane versus Randy Orton. You got two guys that have been around Kane for 15 years and Orton for about 10. And these guys, you know, they put on a good show. They were the second match of the card. So, yeah, both these guys were, you know, on high-profile matches at prior WrestleMania. But you look at it this way. If by The Rock coming in to wrestle John Cena, if that helped bump up the buy rate, then they both made more of a purse for that night's show. Next year, yeah, if they do The Rock versus Brock Lesnar, yeah, you know what? A lot of the guys that bust their ass every night of the year, your guys like Kane, your guys like John Cena, Randy Orton, all those guys that really, you know, work hard, Rey Mysterio, I can name a lot of them, that really work hard, but the fact of the matter is, if you get, instead of 1 million people to buy the show, and you get 1.5 million people to buy the show at $60 or whatever the hell it is, you know, you just increase a hell of a lot of money. And a lot of that money will go into the payout for the wrestler. So that's how you got to look at it. You got to look at it at the bottom line. If the show goes well, you make money. And which I did go on BoxRec to look at James Haney. And yes, he did make $199 for the fight against Ludlow, which really, really, really surprised me.
Maybe it's because of the metric system.
What?
Maybe they had a confusion in the metric system.
I don't know. I was surprised as hell. I almost had a heart attack. But the other part of it, I decided to look. And I found the second opponent that has fought all three, Mike Tyson, Evander Holyfield, and George Foreman. And to let you know, the first fighter I mentioned, his name was Alex Stewart. Alex Stewart fought Evander Holyfield twice, losing by 8th-round TKO, and then a decision. And then Mike Tyson knocked him out in one round, and then he went life and death with George Foreman, losing a decision. This other fighter lost a decision to Evander Holyfield, had a very tough fight with George Foreman, you know, losing by split decision, and was knocked out by Mike Tyson in one round. Would you like to guess who it was?
It was Tommy Morrison, was it?
No, Tommy Morrison only fought George Foreman and beat George Foreman. Never fought Tyson or Holyfield.
Who is it? Go ahead.
You ready?
Yep. Drum roll.
Lou Savarese.
Lou Savarese.
That was the fight where Mike Tyson, like, he had one of his meltdowns. Like, he caught Lou with the first punch of the fight, a big left hook, and dropped him. moved out. Yeah, I think they were over in England or somewhere. And as soon as he got up, like Tyson was just pounding him.
Yeah,
he was supposed to stop him in 30-some seconds. And that's when, like, Tyson just kept, like, beating on him after the referee stopped it. It kind of looked like Pazienza Rosenblatt. And then that's when Tyson made the famous speech. My defense is impregnable. It's like my style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable. I want to fight Lennox Lewis. I'm going to eat his children. Praise be to Allah. That was that fight.
Speaking of Mike Tyson, he's going to be around for a big all-star gala in Atlantic City on June 2nd. It'd be a good time to make a road trip for you here, Tony. There's going to be 100 different personalities at this event, and notables include Tyson, Hall of Fame trainer Lou Duva, so you could meet him in person if you already interviewed him. Former New Jersey Athletic Control Board Commissioner Larry Hazard, legendary fighter Thomas Hearns, former cruiserweight champion Dwight Muhammad Qawi, Bridgestone light heavyweight contender Richie Cates, and former WBA heavyweight champion Bruce Seldon, all in attendance. June 2nd. And, prosecutor Diego.
I was never a big Bruce Seldon fan as a boxer, but I think he would have made a hell of a professional wrestler because he had the ultimate gimmick. It was so ridiculous. They were back in, like, 1991, they were trying to, like, hype up three up-and-coming stars. That being, I think it was early 91, that being Tommy Morrison, Bruce Seldon, and Ray Marshall. Ray Marshall, obviously, being the most accomplished of the group. Morrison, probably being the most exciting, plus he had the Rocky Five, resume on his credentials. So, Morrison opens the show up. He knocks out James Quiktillis in one round. Then they go to Bruce Seldon, who was kind of like the dark horse of the show. Quite a guy by the name of Jose Ribalta, who was best known for nearly getting decapitated by Mike Tyson with an uppercut on one of Mike Tyson's most famous punches. So, Seldon goes out there fighting Jose Ribalta. Obviously, he's an undefeated heavyweight. He is predicted to win the fight. First punch of the fight, Ribalta hits him with, and Seldon goes face first down in the corner. I mean, the punch barely even lands. Seldon goes face first down. Now, a lot of times, you see a guy that's laying on the ground motionless, a referee might count to, like, three or four and then just stop the fight, which, is pretty idiotic on Seldon's part if that would happen. But he waits till the count gets to about five or six, and he springs up. I mean, he literally jumps up and starts jumping around. And then he goes on to knock Ribalta out in three or four rounds. And I'm like, that's got to be the dumbest thing we've ever seen. I mean, hell, I've watched wrestling for years, and yeah, it looks like the Hulk Hogan comeback. So, a couple months later, he set to fight Riddick Bell. And, Riddick's obviously the favorite in this fight. And they're throwing some punches out at each other, and Bo lands a left hook. And down goes Seldon, face first, and he's not moving. It's like, okay, now is he faking or is he being real? Because we've already seen him fake this once. We're on the count of six or seven. He springs up, jumps about 5 feet in the air, and like slams through. He's like, yeah! Bo just walks up, throws a left hook, and knocks him out, for real. And then Bruce, years later, was on a pay-per-view card. He fought a friend of mine, Gerald the Jedi Noble, stopped him. He put Noble down. The only time Gerald ever was knocked out in his career. And then Gerald got up and, kind of kicked his ass over nine rounds before they stopped it. But, yeah, Bruce was definitely a eccentric guy, I'll put it that way. Definitely eccentric.
All right, well, we're getting to the end here. We got our recorded stuff to go for the rest of the show lined up. So I guess it's time now to sign off for us live here. And we're going to go to the Cody Ballinger interview from earlier in the day. And next week we'll have another couple guests for sure. But after the Bollinger interview, we're going to go right to the Shane Mosley and Canelo Alvarez conference call from earlier today, which is about an hour long. So.
All right. Well, sounds good to me.
Good wrap up.
To my peeps out there, Tuesday Fan Club, always a pleasure having you on the show. I'll be back next week, and we will talk then. We will talk about all great things coming up in the world of professional boxing. You know, I'll start to break down the Hopkins versus Dawson rematch. I'm not sure if I'm going to write an article on this one or not. I'm definitely writing the article for the Cotto Mayweather fight. Ring Magazine is picking Mayweather to survive some scary moments and to win by decision. I think there will be some scary moments, yes, but not maybe as many as others think. And I think it's going to be around 8th or 9th round that Mayweather is finally going to cut him up bad, of course, the stoppage due to damage to Cotto's face. Cotto's best chance of winning, I'll still say it, 3 weeks before the fight, is to hire me to implement the strategy. Because I know the strategy to beat Mayweather. I know it. And I know more boxing than his father and his uncle combined.
All right.
Talking shit, I love it.
All right, well, I'll send Miguel Cotto an email and tell him you said that.
Please do.
All
right, have a good night, Rich. I'll talk to you later.
All right, adios.
Later, Pete.
Thanks, Mark.
Tornado out.
Okay, so this is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron, and I'm going to sign out as well and just play this interview that we did a little bit earlier with Cody Bollinger, 12-2. All right, folks, we're on the line with Cody Bollinger, 12-2 in MMA. He's going to fight through May 12th with Dean Thomas. Your MMA circuit, how's it going today, Cody? Working on game plan, team building, evaluation, so Thank you.
Show improvement, show skills, and win the fight.
like Kevin Mayweather did against Mosley, because that's the type of talent that Canelo has. I don't expect him to go and look for the knockout with Shane Mosley, because he hit it right on the button, Canelo. If you look for the knockout, you won't get it. But he didn't look for the knockout when he fought Baldomir, so just never know what's going to happen in that ring, especially when you're facing Canelo. Would you be surprised, or would you? I would be pleasantly surprised if Canelo knocks him out. Obviously, it would catapult him to just another stratosphere. You know, nobody has ever been able to knock out Shane Mosley, including myself, including the best in the world. And if a 21-year-old fighter named Canelo can do it, then that'll be huge.
Thanks, guys. Canelo, good luck.
Thank you.
Our next question is from Dan Rafael with ESPN.
Hello, everybody. Robert, would you ask Canelo, first of all, you know, the fight is on Cinco de Mayo. He's the big Mexican star of the card being at the main event. Is not that kind of fight. What are his thoughts about fighting on that Friday, and certainly in front of a crowd that's going to have many of the same? I mean, there's always, all the top Mexicans have always had that sort of stage over the last, you know, decade or so. Does he have any particular feelings about that?
Canelo, ¿qué significa para ti pelear en una fecha como la es el 5 de mayo, una fecha tan importante para los mexicanos, que en el pasado grandes peleadores mexicanos han peleado en esa fecha, y tú estar ahorita con que los fans van a estar, los mexicanos van a estar pendientes de tu pelea? ¿Qué significa para ti?
Bueno, significa mucho, es un orgullo para mí, para el día de todo México, es una pelea muy importante para mí. Es muy importante para México, entonces va a ser una gran fecha y estoy muy contento de ese día pelear y poder darles una gran satisfacción ese día a México. Para mí va a ser lo más grande, entonces estamos trabajando para eso y me siento muy contento de tener ese día.
Well, I'm very happy to be representing Mexico on such a very important day for all the Mexicans and for me. I mean, to be on this card, to be on this date, and to be fighting a fighter like I'm fighting, it's very important, and I'm very honored and proud, and that's why we're working very, very hard so that all the Mexicans can celebrate and be happy come Cinco de Mayo.
I have another question that you asked also. You know, there's been a lot of discussion about what Shane has done recently. You know, frankly, he looked very bad in his last three fights, two losses by shutout, decision against Pacquiao and against Floyd, and also the draw against Sergio Moro, which, you know, Canelo fought on that same card. I wonder if it is at all difficult for Canelo to look at the show. He sees Floyd sitting there in the main event. He has talked about in the past his desire to fight Floyd. Now he's fighting in the co-feature. If Floyd wins the fight in the main event, he'll be winning one of the belts in the same weight class that Canelo has his belt. How hard is it for him to not think about the possibility that in the future, in the near future, maybe he and Floyd will be in the main event against each other?
Qué difícil es para ti concentrarte ahorita ante Mosley, que no se ha visto pues, lo mejor en sus últimas tres peleas, dos derrotas, un empate, y sabiendo que en el estelar está Mayweather, si llegara a ganar Mayweather contra Cotto, estaría campeón en la misma división que tú estás, y que más adelante se puedan enfrentar y estar en el estelar en una de las peleas más grandes tú contra Mayweather.
No, yo estoy concentrado 100% en lo que es Mosley. Ahora me va a desconcentrar porque ya me pasó una vez, una ocasión de hecho, cuando peleó Mayweather contra Mosley en Las Vegas, yo peleé ahí. Y pues era para mí algo nuevo, ¿no? Estaba distraído por el tipo de cartelera que era, otros medios, otra gente. Entonces, todo eso ya me pasó, ya tengo la experiencia y yo voy ahí concentrado en lo que es mi pelea y hacer un trabajo bien.
Ay, no sé si voy a perder mi concentración. My focus, I'm concentrating solely 100% on Shane Mosley. I have the experience of it happened to me once, precisely on the card when Floyd fought Shane. I was a little distracted because it was all new, the big card, the big event, the media, the people,
the scenery. So I've learned from that. Today I'm 100% concentrating on the task at hand, and that's what I'm going to do.
Okay, so let me ask you about that. I mean, you don't have to concentrate on the site because you can sit back and promote and watch it. What are your thoughts about the possibility in the future? You know, if Keller takes care of the business like everybody expects he will, I'm just if that you could be another big pay-per-view event that you can promote involving Canelo against Mayweather.
Well, there's definitely a bigger prize at the end of the tunnel. If Canelo wins or if Mosley wins, I mean, the winner will go on to bigger and better fights. That's a given. You can either face the winner of Andre Berto, Victor Ortiz. You can face the winner of Floyd Mayweather, Cleo Cotto. So this is a very important fight. But obviously,
I thought you guys have talked about it, that there's been discussion about it specifically. If things work out, then it would be potentially employed against Canelo.
Well, it's definitely something we have to sit down and talk about after the fact, after May 5th, but those would be the plans in the near future.
How big of a fight is that, do you think? I mean, I'm asking a guy that's been involved in many of the biggest fights in recent boxing history.
I actually would be biting my nails because that fight can get close to my fight with Floyd Mayweather.
Very good. Thank you very much. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Lube Oslo with El Diario. Hola, Canelo. Al principio tú dijiste que has visto varios videos de peleas de Mosley. Mi pregunta es, ¿qué aprendiste de ello? ¿Cuán provechoso fue eso?
The question is, at the beginning you mentioned you've watched many videos coming up of Shane Mosley. What is it that you learned from him? What is it that you picked up from these videos?
Bueno, he visto muchos videos de él, lo que he aprendido, obviamente sus contragolpes, su manera de pelear en el ring, obviamente con otro estilo, a lo mejor mío, pero he aprendido varias cosas de él y me han servido mucho.
I've learned a lot about him. You know, how he punches, how he counter punches, and his movements and everything. And, you know, I've adapted it to my own style, but I've learned a lot from Shane Mosley in the past.
La siguiente pregunta para Canelo también. ¿Crees que esta es la pelea más difícil de enfrentar a tu carrera?
The next question is, do you think that this will be your most difficult fight that you've had in your career?
Sí, va a ser una pelea muy difícil para mí. Es una pelea muy difícil, pero pues estamos listos para esto, ¿no? Nosotros es lo que queremos y me siento muy contento y, como lo he dicho, es un honor para mí pelear con él. Arriba del ring, obviamente, se pide de todo. Vamos a pelear nosotros, a subirnos al ring y a ganar y dar lo mejor de nosotros ese día.
Yes, yes, I'm very, very happy and very motivated, and, you know, we admire him. It's an honor for me to be fighting him, but once I step into the ring, that all goes out the window. I'm here, I'm there to fight, and we're going to give our best of ourselves. We're going to go in there and win.
Esta pelea es para Oscar. Oscar, ¿tú consideras que Canelo es el mejor boxeador en los últimos tiempos, el más popular ahora mismo?
Pues fíjate que a la edad está muy avanzado, obviamente más avanzado si los comparo a los mejores del mundo como Floyd Mayweather, como Manny Pacquiao, como un Shane Mosley, como muchos, ¿no? Hasta conmigo, el Canelo va en muy buen camino, está aprendiendo muy rápidamente, está tiene la experiencia ya, pues con estas peleas está aprendiendo mucho y pues él está listo, él está preparado, él está listo para cualquiera. Esta pelea es una pelea muy grande, una pelea que va a ser muy difícil porque Shane Mosley, él sabe que es su última pues pelea de esta magnitud, ¿no? Y yo creo que va a estar bien preparado, así que el Canelo va en muy buen camino y no me va a sorprender a mí que el Canelo sea uno de los más grandes de todos los tiempos.
Y
turned out he's in the right times, going the right times, and yes, he is in a very difficult fight, but very confident that he'll get through it and become one of the biggest fighters in history.
Finalmente, la Oscar también. Esta en realidad podría haber sido dos carteleras, pero tener a cuatro peleadores como Canelo, Mosley, Cotto, Mayweather, es algo que la afición al boxeo estuvo esperando. ¿Cuán difícil fue programar esta cartelera?
Claro, pues es muy importante, ¿no?, de darle especialmente a los fans lo que se merece, ¿no?, una buena cartelera en una sola noche. Yo creo que era muy importante de tener al Canel, de tener estas peleas en la cartelera de Mayweather con Miguel Cotto, porque Mayweather es un peleador ya establecido en el mercado de pay-per-view, y pues obviamente nuestro plan entre Golden Boy Promotions es pues tener a exponer al Canelo en ese mercado, y pues esta es la mejor plataforma, ¿no?, este 5 de mayo, así que yo creo que van a estar viendo muchas carteleras en el futuro de Golden Boy y de Canelo Promotions, carteleras en donde vamos a tener muchas estrellas en el boxeo, nombres en el boxeo, así que esta es una de las primeras de muchas para el mundo del boxeo.
Gracias.
The question was, this actually could have been two separate cards with the names and fighters you have on this card, Oscar. How difficult was to make it? I mean, you have Canelo against Mosley, Mayweather against Cotto. How difficult was it to put on one card? And Oscar's response was, you know, that this is what we're trying to do here, is put on the best cards. This is the first of many, and you can expect that. We're trying to get back to the fans and bring back boxing the way it should be.
Okay, folks, we're going to fast forward a little bit to later in the call. Time constraints here. And some technical.
I'm sorry, I need you to talk up just a little bit more. That was very hard to hear.
Okay, let's go ahead and start the questioning. If you would like to ask a question or have a comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Your hand is raised. When asked your question, then prompted, press the pound sign to lower your hand.
I have Thank you.
comes from the rich pregnant with 5 years.
Hey, Jane, just wondering, what does a seventh world title mean to your legacy as a boxer?
Well, it means a lot.
Well,
to win the title.
And what would you say your ultimate goal in sport boxing is?
The ultimate goal is
a little bit more. It is really tough hearing you. Thank you.
Thanks, Marcia.